guys, I want to talk to you really quick about one of my favorite partners, which is BlackOvis.com. And I've been using BlackOvis since way before I had a TV show or a podcast or any of that stuff. They're kind of your one-stop shop for anything you need as far as solid hunting gear. They got camping stuff, they got crispy boots, seek outside shelters, loophole optics, tons of other great brands. And they also have their own in-house brand, which is pretty good stuff. They got some really good merinos and some puffies that I've worn before. And they're at a great price point. The other thing I love about Black Ovis is their custom arrow shop. A lot of people don't know this, but you can send in your exact specifications for your specific type of arrow, your length, your fletchings, your inserts, field tips, all that stuff. And Black Ovis will custom make your arrows and send them straight to your door. It's a really cool deal, guys. So go over there to blackovis.com, check out everything they got over there. And when you do, use the promo code QUEST and you will save and you'll help support the show. So go to blackovis.com, use that code QUEST and get some solid hunting gear. All right, everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters, and today I'm joined by Mr. Carter Lewis, a fellow Virginian. How you doing, sir?
Good about you, buddy.
Good, man. So where exactly are you in Virginia?
Just a little bit north of Richmond in King William County.
Okay, nice. Is that where you grew up, or are you from somewhere else? Or
I grew up in Hanover County, just south of there, and then did a lot of my hunting and starting out in like sort of the central Virginia area.
Okay, cool, man. So we have a mutual friend, our friend Chris, who he works with SCI. And did you guys like go to high school together or something?
So we were both turkey hunting in Nebraska at the same time, and I saw his stuff on Instagram. He was getting on the turkeys and I wasn't getting on the turkeys. So sent him a couple DMs, just seeing where he was at, what he was doing, and we've kept in touch ever since then.
Okay, nice. And so is turkey hunting, is that like your main deal, your favorite type of hunting? Or
I wouldn't say it's, I mean, definitely when it's springtime, that's where my mind's at, but I really don't want to say I have a favorite. So
yeah, I hear you, man. Okay, so let's back up a little bit. So you grew up in Hanover County, which is right outside of Richmond. So how'd you kind of get started hunting? What's your kind of backstory, like childhood, that kind of thing?
So my grandparents, they had a pretty big farm in King George County, just a little bit north of there. So I started off just deer hunting, turkey hunting when I was like 12, 13 years old. A family friend took me out, shot my first doe in a bean field up there. And then I had some really good mentors start me turkey hunting in the same area. That's sort of how it all took off about 5 years ago. Started getting into the western side of things, and that's really where my focus is now.
So what was your draw out west, or like when did you start wanting to do that?
I've always wanted to, and I think it's one of those things a lot of people always talk about it. Everybody wants to go on an elk hunt, everybody wants to go get a mule deer. But back in 2018, I had a pretty life-altering injury. And after that, I was like, okay, life's short. Really got to go get after this and do this now while it's still possible.
Yeah, and I want to dig into that a little bit more. But what was your first trip out west?
My first trip out west was that turkey trip in Nebraska.
Okay.
I had a couple of days off work, and I was just doing some research. I was like, man, Nebraska's got an early March turkey season. We've got a couple of days, like, just going to get in the truck and wing it. Headed on out there. No bird that time, but it definitely got my interest going.
That's interesting. So I guess not too many guys get their start kind of going, you know, out west, public land kind of stuff for turkey, but, that actually is not a bad idea because it's a small animal. It's, you know, I'm not going to say it's easier to hunt, but it might be. It probably is easier, let's be honest. Sorry. So we're dealing with a little bit of lag here, folks. I had to cut Carter's video, so we're just going to do this audio, but hopefully that'll fix the problem. But I was just saying that, I always recommend to guys to do like a antelope hunt to start off out west, because that's a little more approachable, a little easier hunt, But that's mainly just because I'm not a huge turkey hunter. Like, I personally probably wouldn't like travel and nothing against turkey hunting. It's just like me personally, like I'm not as drawn to it, or I would like do a out of state multi-day trip for turkey. But if you are into turkey hunting, that's probably a really good place to start, 'cause it's, you know, a much smaller animal, probably easier to get tags. And like, let's be honest, it's probably a little easier to kill a turkey than like a mule deer or something. So, did you like think about it in those terms, or is it just like it just kind of an opportunity that popped up? Like, what made you want to do the turkey first?
That was just honestly an opportunity that popped up. So that's how that worked out. It was early March. I started doing my research, found out that the early season, like I said, had those days off work and could just make it happen.
Okay. What were you doing for work at the time?
I was still a firefighter. I still
Okay.
am now.
Yeah. So you're a firefighter. So let's go back a little bit. When did you start when did you get into being a firefighter? And like take me through that whole process, starting a firefighter, take me through into getting hurt and all that.
Okay. I started off volunteering in high school. So Hanover County, they do a really cool program where you basically get your certifications in order to be a firefighter while in high school.
Oh, cool.
So did that my junior year and then was able to start volunteering during my senior year. Took a break, went and joined the Army Reserves, had to go leave to go to do all my training. And when I came back, just working local here at home, going to community college, and I was volunteering one of my days off. In
Nice.
2019, 2018, I applied, was able to get the job, and finished my recruit school. And unfortunately, on the first day that we had in the field, we got hit on the interstate by a tractor trailer.
On your first day,
So, yeah.
that is wild.
So
Okay,
I ended up,
wait, hold on a second. Take me back.
yeah.
Give me more detail, man. Tell me the story. Like, what happened?
All right, so it was during Tropical Storm Michael. You probably remember that. Pulled up on the interstate on 295, just north of Richmond, and literally pulled over, just a basic car wreck. Pulled over to help the people, and as soon as I got out, I could hear my lieutenant yelling. I come to find out later, he was yelling for one of my other guys to jump back in the rig because he saw the tractor trailer coming. So the tractor trailer hit the back of the engine and pushed the fire truck basically over top of me, and crushed my right foot. I woke up, the tractor trailer was destroyed, the engine was destroyed, and I was just laying in the middle of both of those. I crawled myself up out of the ditch. Some more crews arrived, helped me get out of the ditch on the median. I sat there and I saw my leg was broken. Like, it just, you ever sprain your ankle? It sort of felt like that. I guess
So
from all the
you lost
shock and the
consciousness
adrenaline.
though?
Yeah, very briefly. I had like a pretty good little goose egg, like right on my forehead, but luckily I didn't have any kind of like concussion or anything. So I got up on the median, and the other guys that got to me, and I was like, my leg's broken, that's it, I'm fine. I couldn't find anybody else who was on the crew at the time, and it came to find out one of the guys who was driving, he got hit by the tractor trailer and thrown on the median. He had a lot of really bad injuries, and then my lieutenant, who I had heard yelling, he ultimately lost his life.
Oh man. That's terrible, man.
So, yeah, no, it was pretty awful. I was in the hospital for like 3 weeks after that, just with the amputation and everything. Basically, my foot didn't get cut off on scene, but it was just crushed to the point where they just knew there was no point in trying to save it. So, went through all that, and then I also had a really bad knee injury on the same leg. All my ligaments were just snapped, twisted from my knee, just getting buckled. And so I had to get all new, like, cadavered out ligaments in my knee, little some metal, some screws and stuff in there. And then I had to eventually go home, and I went back to the hospital like 2 weeks after that for a little infection, nothing serious. But I was finally out of the hospital by, I think, like middle of November. So I got
Dang,
to come
man.
home for a little bit, and I just had to go back. So I went through physical therapy and got my first prosthetic, like, I think end of January, just because it takes time for the stump and everything to heal. and got straight on that, did a lot of physical therapy again for that, and was able to actually go back to work full duty riding the truck in May 15th.
Wow. So, okay, what take me back to that moment when you like wake up and you look down. Are you in a lot of pain? What are you thinking when you look down and your foot is just like destroyed?
I honestly couldn't really see it just how dark it was. It's the tires what went over it and it sucked my boot off, but our turnout gear pants are so long and sort of covered it up. So I honestly never even saw it. I just felt the pain and I was like, oh, I broke my ankle was what I thought. Never occurred to me that I got like ran over. I really didn't know what happened.
So the did it
So
just run over only your foot?
yeah, pretty much like right below the ankle, like between my toes and my ankle, just right over that.
Man. And so
So, but it shattered like the ball of the ankle and all that kind of stuff. So all the good internal parts were shot.
man, so and that was your first day on the job. Like the chance, like what are the chances of that? That is crazy.
Yeah, no, it was nuts.
So did you deal with any I don't know, like PTSD from losing your lieutenant and just kind of the whole situation, or like nightmares or stress or anything like that? Or what was it like mentally just kind of going through a traumatic experience like that?
Never really dealt with any PTSD or anything. I honestly just getting through all that, just stayed close to my friends. I had a lot of friends in the department already, talking with them, keeping my mind off stuff. And then I just knew that it is what it is as far as my amputation was. Just had to get back on my feet, get my prosthetic, and be good to go. So I knew there's obviously a pretty good like history of guys coming back with amputations and prosthetics, and there's even guys in special forces who have them. So I was never really too worried about getting back to where I was. I wanted it to get back to where I was as fast as possible. So I pushed myself really hard, like in PT and everything, just trying to get
Did you feel any like sense of, I don't know, like loss or like sadness or like anything like that? Or is it pretty much just like get back in there and get healed up as quick as you can?
for me, yeah, just getting back in there and getting healed up as quick as I could. I stayed really close to my lieutenant's family. Brad Clark was his name, and even now we're still all talking pretty regularly, and we're basically family at this point. Same with the other two guys on the truck. Dave, we stayed super close to him. He had to ultimately medically retire, and then Chris, the other guy, he was able to walk away pretty unscathed, and he's still a firefighter today.
Okay.
So keeping those relationships and staying close really helps.
Yeah, and then so what was the rehabilitation process like? I guess how long did it take, and what was kind of the hardest part? Because I can imagine, like, I saw a guy just the other day who was out for a run, and he was an amputee, like I guess below the knee, and I was like, man, good for that guy. Because I can imagine that dealing with something like that, it's probably pretty hard to stay in shape, get back in shape. What was that process like? How long did it take, and what was kind of the hardest part for you?
The hardest part was probably like comfortability as far as like getting used to the socket that my leg sits in. Just like blisters and soreness, that kind of stuff. So my skin had to toughen up. And then also I lost like 30 pounds. I was down to like 131, which I probably haven't been 130 pounds since like middle school. So I was just super skinny. Had to try to put some of that muscle back on, but just by working out. And then what took even longer than getting used to the socket was my knee, just because of all the repairs that happened there. I had to spend a lot of time doing like stretches and just trying to get that flexibility really back, which even now it's not 100%. It's like 85 probably, but it's probably as good as it's ever going to get just because of the reconstruction that went on.
So your problem wasn't like, see, like the way my body type, like if I don't basically crush myself, like I just get fat really easy. So it sounds like that's not your problem. Your problem was you lost a bunch of muscle mass that you had to regain, huh?
Yeah, no, when I went back to work, had to take the physical agility test again, which I had just done, during academy. We do it like twice a week before I got hurt. And so trying to do that again, losing all that muscle mass, I'd pick up a ladder and be like, holy crap, this thing feels like it's 200 pounds and it's only like 60.
Oh, man.
So I'm just trying to put some of that muscle back on. And eventually I probably put on a little bit too much, got to be like a little bit of a fat kid, like a year and a half to be going in 2 years after that. So then I had to dial back, lose another 30 pounds, and now I'm at this good, like, healthy, stable weight where I am now. So.
Okay. I guess what was like one thing you learned, I guess, through that process, or like you mentioned earlier about, it kind of changed your life. Obviously it changed your life 'cause you lost your foot, but it was bigger than that. Like, how did that change your mindset and like and just kind of what you're doing now?
Oh, it just made me realize like life is just so short. Like I just turned 20 when that happened. So like to almost lose everything at 20 years old, like you can't take anything for granted. So like when somebody says, you want to do this trip and people are hesitant, like, no, I don't want to leave, don't want to drive, like you just got to do it. You never know when everything can end, honestly. So
Yeah. So what about
that
you
was my biggest
personally
change
though?
in
Like,
attitude.
okay, so what was your next step after kind of you were back to health and back into work? Like, were you actively planning trips or like how'd that kind of go?
So I did that turkey trip. That was the first one that spring.
Oh,
And
so that
then
was
after
after your
that,
accident, huh?
no, I'm sorry, that was a year after. So not that spring, but the year after that.
Okay.
So that was like the first one I planned. And then I had a really good friend who I grew up hunting with in Virginia. So the spring after that spring, he wanted to do a bear hunt, which I hadn't really thought about. I was more looking at like mule deer and elk and kind of stuff. But, he was talking about the bear hunt, and I was like, that sounds like a cool idea. Over the counter tag in Western Montana, get to go spend some time in the mountains, see some cool stuff. So I started getting myself ready for that. Obviously, just rucking, training. I knew it was gonna be a lot harder than any whitetail or turkey on here on the East Coast will ever be. So I got myself in shape for that and planned to go out there that May. Managed to go out there with another buddy and turkey hunt for a few days before that bear hunt started. So we killed some turkeys in Montana, and then me and him, he met me after that, and then we drove up to like the far northwest corner of Montana. So
Okay.
we spent, I want to say it was like a 5 day hunt. It was what you would imagine a western Montana spring hunt to be, nothing but rain, snow, and grizzly bear sign. So no bears, unfortunately, but it really sparked that fire of like, yeah, I need to get out in the mountains and see. Get after some of this big game because this is just awesome. So obviously that summer I started researching, preference points and the crazy draw systems that are all in the western states and just trying to prepare myself for the next couple of years the best I could.
Yeah. I guess how did you prepare for I mean specifically for you as an amputee, how did you prepare? But also just as a guy from Virginia, a new Western hunter, because I did a lot of this, our stories are similar in some ways, obviously not the injury, but as far as starting on the East Coast, Virginia, and going out west and then kind of going all in, how did you find that learning process? What was some of the hardest stuff you had to figure out, and how'd you do it, man? Like, what how'd you like flatten that learning curve a little bit, or what was your strategies there?
As an amputee, obviously, just dealing with like the soreness of putting on a bunch of weight and then going to gain 2,000 feet of elevation. So I'll do a lot of just rucking here, where I'm at. Not too many hills, just because we don't really have the opportunity. But trying to put some miles on, get used to it, and then just regular strength and conditioning workouts at the local gym. One thing, like Virginia, we're lucky we do have some mountains. So
Yeah.
especially during the summers before fall, I'll go out to like Old Rag and some of those mountains and do some of those hikes, just day hikes, put some weight on and just get used to that steep incline, steep out and down climbs. So that really cut my learning curve. Really nice just having the mountains here. And then Yeah, so Troy, my buddy, went bear hunting. We talked a lot, just tips, gear, that kind of stuff. He'd been on an elk hunt before, so he had some ideas of what to do. And then a lot of it was just digging in the internet, self-research, self-learning, watching some YouTube videos, and then even trying to incorporate some Western hunting tactics and stuff I'd do in Virginia if I wasn't out west. So I think that helps shorten the learning curve a little bit.
Yeah, I remember for me, I didn't know. I mean, obviously there's the physical training part, but I didn't know anything about like backpacking even, or like mountain boots, or like just stuff that guys that kind of grow up out west like take for granted. I had to like start from scratch. Like my first trip, I didn't even know like about proper boot fit, and so like my boots were like too big, and I ended up getting like terrible blisters and stuff like that. Were there any, or I guess what were some of the big things or pitfalls, or did you make any like early mistakes, early on that kind of stand out?
Same thing. The boots. I bought some a cheaper pair of boots. I was like, ah, this will be fine. But
What'd you
8 miles into
get?
Montana, they were not fine.
What'd you get?
Just a cheap pair of Loas.
Of what? Oh, okay.
Loas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now I'm on like my third set of crispies. I've destroyed the other two.
Okay,
So definitely a step up.
which ones did you land on?
So I ran two pairs of the Idaho twos. And I really
Okay.
liked those. They did well. And now I'm on the Colorados, which I just got them like last month. But I did Mountain Archery Fest this past weekend in Colorado with those and broke them in and really liking those. A little bit lighter than the Idahos.
That's interesting. See, I started off with some nice boots. I got some like crispy guide boots, but and I did break them in as best I could. But I found for me, I don't know if it's because I grew up wearing flip-flops and like skating shoes or what, but like the stiff boots, like I just can't do it. Like it completely changes the way I walk. It just messes me up. And so yeah, my first trip, like I was wearing like some of the stiffest boots probably out there. And they were too big, and like 2 miles in, I was like, this is bad. And I spent like the next like 3 days hunting in my Crocs and gaiters. But you like the stiff ones, huh?
That's awesome. Yeah, definitely. My ankle, I guess just because I put so much weight and pressure on my left ankle, I feel like I wear it out. So I like having that ankle support. So a
Okay.
stiff boot, and then I'll take my gaiters and like cinch those things on there, just try to give me some more support on that ankle.
Okay. Anything else besides boots that you did that you would change going back, or?
I wish I had done more research on like backpacks and gear. I sort of just went straight for the first name brand thing I saw. I was like, oh yeah, I like this company, and picked it up. And I was like, okay, this is not at all what I want. So,
What was your first pack?
like my first it was one of the Sika packs. I don't even know
Okay.
what model it was, but yeah, like it had the world's tiniest meat shelf in there. Like you could probably put a turkey breast in there. That's about it. So there's just no good. Pockets are all jacked up. Like they make good shirts and stuff, but stay away from their rucksacks.
Yeah, it's easy to, I'm the same way. It's easy to in the beginning, there's so much stuff you got to learn. There's so much gear, and you don't have to have the best stuff on your first trip, and you won't. Like you got to like you can't buy all the best stuff right off the bat. You got to like kind of and you got to figure out what works for you. Like you don't know what's going to be best for you 'cause you don't even know what you need or what you like. But yeah, do as much research as you can. And also, one of the biggest things I learned gear-wise is just the whole concept of like buy once, cry once. Like, don't try to. And there's certain items you just like prioritize. Backpack being one of them. I went out and bought a, I think like cheap like Cabela's backpack or something, and because it looked nice or whatever, it was on sale, and then ended up, down the road, I bought a legit pack because it just wasn't cutting it. So you end up spending more money in the long run if you kind of rush things, and it's hard because it's exciting and you want to get stuff and it's like Christmas or something. But really taking your time, figuring out, doing your research is crucial.
By now, I've met and look at before help now can
Okay, say that again. I didn't hear a word you said.
Oh, my bad.
It's
I was
all good.
saying going out west now, meeting more people who go out west. I'm in a better place. I can try their stuff before I buy, get their input, what they like, what they didn't like. And now I really like hone down my system as far as what I like to do.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling pretty confident with everything I got going into this fall.
So how many trips out west have you done now to this point?
Oof, I don't even know. Last year I had six tags, I
Nice.
think. So, but I try to combine my trips. So like I'll drive out there, the 30 hours all the way from Virginia, and I'll try to do like two or three at a time. Just take like 2, 3 weeks, whatever it is, just to try to save some of that drive time. And then I'll try to like leave my truck somewhere out there. My buddy in Montana, I'll leave it at his house or whatever, just to save me the miles driving back and forth, and I'll fly back home. So my truck's usually always pretty swamped. But then
Yeah.
also like getting all the meat back and everything.
Okay, so
So, but yeah, no, last year I did six. Good. Last year I did six different tags, and then the year before I didn't really draw anything.
okay.
So the year before I just did like a DIY antelope hunt and then a semi-guided archery mule deer in Nebraska. So I wasn't successful in either of those. And then the year before that, did a couple duck trips out west, one in Canada, just DIY stuff, and then another semi-guided mule deer hunt in Nebraska. So,
Nice.
but this past season was my most successful season and the most I went out. And also this spring I went out, did a bunch of turkey hunting again in Washington, Idaho, Florida, not really a western hunt, but another turkey trip. And then we did spring bear again as well.
Okay.
Got closer to a bear this time, at least saw a couple, but
Yeah. Dude, that can be a really tough hunt. I kind of underestimated that hunt myself because the first time I ever went, I was with some like really good bear hunters that had a really good spot. And I was like, oh, I could do this, but it's so like dependent on conditions and timing. If you don't hit it just right in the right spot, it can be pretty tough. But what was your first successful like fully DIY trip? And just run me through that like in as much detail as you can.
okay. My first successful, like actually getting an animal on the ground was, I guess it was some of my turkey trips.
Well, I
So
guess big
we did the
game, I would
Montana
say.
one, also the Wyoming one. The Wyoming one was truly DIY. Okay. Successful actually was my elk hunt. It was my first like truly 100% DIY success story. So that
Nice.
was pretty awesome because that was one of my biggest milestones, was to get on a bull and be able to do it all by myself. My buddy was there to help me. So that was just a great overall experience. So that was Montana on a general tag. Dealt with a lot of challenges on that, just as far as getting away from people, dealing with bulls just over on private, public boundaries kind of deal. We had great weather though, so that was awesome. Like I think the coldest it got was like 30 degrees and everything else was really mild. And yeah, like every day I ended up knocking an arrow. Like every day I had an interaction. Every day I heard bugles, saw a bull, tried to stalk. So getting that first bull out of the way, I really feel like going in this next year, I'm gonna be pretty set up for some good success.
All right, you gave me the 30,000-foot view. I want like details. So take me through like you get your tag. I want to hear how you start looking for spots, how you're approaching it, what you do when you get there, how you start the hunt, and how you do the hunt, and tell me the story. I want to hear it all.
Yep. So got that tag, what, late fall or not fall, late spring. Got set up, was obviously just tearing Onyx apart, just pins on everything, doing all the e-scouting I possibly could.
What are you looking for when you're e-scouting?
Reading, calling, but so then I was looking, obviously, there's juicy basins, there's nice slopes, places to get away from obviously the road hunters, places to try to I don't like to commit myself too far in, but I like to get far enough in from the majority of people. I think there's something about trying to get so far to where you can't get back out. You know,
And
you go 6 miles in and now you gotta.
one of the biggest things I learned, and it just kind of came together in the last couple years. When you first get into it and you're like listening to all this content about, oh, backcountry, da da da, and like going in deep and and all that's great. But if you're from out of state and you don't know where the animals are, like I used to e-scout and like find a spot that I really liked based on e-scouting, and then I would just like go in a lot, like 5, 6 miles or whatever. But the problem is, if you get in there and there's no animals, you just wasted a whole lot of time and effort. Whereas what you really should be doing is starting wide, using your vehicle, using your glass, getting to know the area on a high level. And then once you find some animals, then you can go in deep. Or if you're not, if you need to later, you can spike way off the road or whatever you got to do. But I think a lot of guys who, have kind of a romantic idea of backcountry hunting and public land hunting, like they feel like day one, because I felt like this, like day one, you got to, hike 10 miles in. But that's really kind of a bad plan. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And then as far as like my e-scouting then, obviously you're looking for water sources and all that kind of stuff. But what I started to figure out was everybody's looking for that. So the first trailhead I pulled up to when I got to Montana, I was by myself. My buddy Troy, he still had to work a couple of days, so he wasn't able to get meet me. Pulled up and dude, there was like six different trucks right there at that trailhead. So I was like, oh, this is not ideal what we're gonna try. As I'm like getting my pack and everything on, my plan was just to go in there. There was a spot where I thought I could glass, sit up and just glass for the evening, see what happens. Get ready. Another truck pulls up. They go in, whatever. I go in, sit down for like an hour, just glassing. And dude, I had two sets of guys walk like right behind me, just walking through, talking bullshit. And I was like, okay, this is not gonna work out. I could see like some distant smoke fire camps and stuff going on. I was like, whatever, I'm gonna get out of here. It's a waste of my time. So I backed out, left, and there was another mountain range I wanted to go check out. I was like, this one is a little bit farther from the cities, like maybe it'd be less pressured. And on the way to that, I passed a pickup truck coming out of a dead end road with just a giant bull on the back of it. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. Look on the Onyx, and there's a couple little blocks of public down that road. It dead ends in the national forest. I was like, you know what? We'll give this a shot. It was sort of just like rolling hills with scattered, like sporadic little tree patches. I go down there, set up camp for the night because at that point it was getting pretty dark. Tried to bugle a couple times late at night, didn't hear anything. Next morning, I hike in there super early, get like halfway down this little piece of a BMA. And set up on sort of like a glassing knob, sitting there glassing around. I bugle again, didn't hear anything. Watching some mule deer because I had the combo tag, so like theoretically,
Oh,
if I
cool.
saw a buck, I could still go after it. So I was glassing some muleys, a couple little small bucks, and across like this little drainage for me, I see this big yellow thing on the hillside. I look up and I was like, no way. And there's like this little raghorn just looking at me. Probably only 400 yards away, but I had sort of made a rookie mistake where I was sitting and I was somewhat skylined. So he saw me, but he didn't really spook. He sort of tucked back in the trees. I grabbed my stuff. The wind was good and I ran over there, tried to cut up around where I thought he was. Got in there, made some calf calls, whatever. He didn't come out. Saw some sign, went back in there that evening, heard some other bulls like distantly bugling. I was like, okay, this could work out. Like all these patches of trees are passing through, whatever. Again, hunted again, same deal, heard some bulls. The next day, my buddy was able to meet me. He came, met me. We hiked in that morning, and the rut, I guess, just switched on. Like we heard a bugle every like 10 to 20 minutes, just like distantly throughout this giant, like rolling hill basin. Nothing was inside the piece of BMA we're in. It wasn't that big of a piece of public. But finally we looped around and we saw a giant spike, like had like 3 foot tall spikes, and a couple cows like right on the fence line of private and public. They're just chilling there. Behind them, there was a bull just absolutely losing his mind, bugling like every couple minutes. He was sort of up over a hill, so we couldn't see him. Moved in, and I got set up, tried to do some calf calls, tried to just pull those cows across the fence. Because my mind at that point is like, I'm going to shoot a cow or a spike. I don't care. First elk, and I would really like to try a big elk steak.
Yeah.
Did that. I had that spike come in to like 80 yards, but he was on the other side of the fence. And I'm not going to shoot across the fence, obviously. So we played that game with that little herd for another day and a half or 2 days. Forget exactly, but eventually we're like, you know what? They're not going to cross this fence. Like they know this deal. One of the days we had another guy like try to sneak in on top of us. We heard a cow call sort of behind us on the public. And I was like, oh man, there's a cow here. Turn around, get in position, and there's some dude in the bushes blowing his little reed. So we were sort of frustrated at that point. We started glassing up on the hillsides on the mountain range, just sort of above this place. And we saw a really nice bull, like sort of corralling a bunch of cows and a couple raghorns. They had come down from the national forest just onto private. So we looked on Onyx and we're like, man, we can make a play on these because I bet they're bedding on that slope and then coming down to feed on the private. So the next morning we hunted that same BMA again because we knew if we wanted to get after that other herd, we'd have to wait for the thermals to switch. Because the only way to get after them was to go up, over, and down a mountain. So we hunted until like 9 o'clock, drove about an hour to get in position, had a decent little hike, gained about 1,000 feet of elevation, got to the top of this mountain, and it was like 12 o'clock at that point. Laid down and we're just taking a little mountain siesta, eating some snacks, drinking some coffee, and heard a bugle at like 12:30 in the afternoon below us. It's like, okay, game on. Bomb down, lose about another 700 feet of elevation, and we're like, oh, this could be where they're at. Let's just rip a cow call, see what happens. And Troy hit two little cow calls, and four bulls were bugling on top of us within 200 yards.
Wow.
Like we had just bombed right into their bedroom, didn't even realize it. So I run to get in position, and as I'm trying to like get 50 yards in front of Troy to where this little bench and opening is, I hear like a hoof hitting some rocks, and this raghorn just came straight in. I had to stop in the middle of in just the middle of the woods, no backdrop, no trees in front of me, no tree behind me, just standing there. And I'm sort of above him. He walks in, turns broadside, and when he turns broadside, there's like a fallen down tree in front of me and a rock. And as he was coming in, I managed to get my rangefinder out and hit some ranges just to see where he'd be. And he stopped right at 35 yards broadside, but all I could see was like his neck, his head, and like his back strap. So no shot. And when he had turned, he got broadside, I had drawn back. He kept looking up at me like he was curious. And then Troy behind me was still like cow calling and bugling. Because at this point, the other bulls who were there were just ripping bugles. You could hear him thrashing the trees. Troy was raking a tree. Like we had really stirred the hornet's nest, so to speak. And I was just sitting there holding on this raghorn, and it felt like 5 minutes. Like it was probably only a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And I just had to let down. As soon as the bull like turned his head a little bit from looking at me, I let down. He saw that and he jumped and he ran like 15 yards. And I was like, man, this is over. And Troy bugled again just as that happened because he saw me let down. And that bull turned around, looked back at me, and did the same thing. But this time when he came at me, he turned broadside in almost the same spot, but like 3 feet further back. So I could see his vitals this time. Squeeze one off, let it rip. It hit like high lung on the first side, and it was trying to exit like low lung on the other side. It didn't exit, it stuck in a rib. He turned and ran. Troy again saw me shoot, bugled. The bull stopped like 50, 60 yards. I knocked another arrow. My arrow was sticking out of him, and I was about to draw back, and he got dizzy and just fell over dead.
Oh, man.
So it was just perfect the way it happened. I was about to do the whole, jump up and yell like all hype. And I was like, oh no, I need to be quiet. Troy still got a tag. Let's try to kill another one.
Yeah.
So me and him switched. I started calling, and Troy snuck up to the big 6x6, who was like, I just had a view from where I shot mine. And the bull was sitting there with two spikes, just raking a tree, just pissed off that we were there. And Troy got to like 60 yards and almost shot him, but the bull picked him off like the last minute. So we almost had a lot of work for ourselves,
Yeah, you
but
probably dodged a bullet on that
he
one.
backed off after that one spook. Yeah, probably. But we backed off. We're thinking about going after one of the other two that are bugling because, again, they're all within like 200 yards. But Troy was like, no, nah, I'm good. I'm going to take some of your elk meat. And well, we've already got enough of a hell hike out of here. So we, for the first like hour, we're butchering my bull, and the other bulls are bugling like 200 yards from us. The guys were cutting mine up. So it was pretty surreal. But
That's awesome, man.
packed out half of them that first night. We didn't get out of there. It's like 9 o'clock. So I shot that bull a little bit after 12, like what, 1:30-ish maybe. We didn't get out of there until pretty late that night. Slept right there in the parking lot the next morning, went in and got the last load of meat out. And yeah, we were pretty banged up, pretty sore at that point. Had some blisters and stuff on my nub that I've never had before.
I bet.
And went home after that, took some showers, and I actually dropped the meat off, my portion of the meat, at a butcher there, just to get it frozen and get it processed and all that kind of stuff. And then help Troy divvy up his portion. And then, yeah, I just hung out in Montana for the next couple of days, took the skull to get Euro mounted because I knew I was going to fly back later in November to get my truck and to do a mule deer hunt as well. So that was yeah, that was the end of my September elk hunt, and that was it's pretty awesome. Definitely pretty ate up with it and hooked now. So
Yeah, that's awesome, man. How far back in there were you guys?
it was just under 2 miles probably, but it was a pretty steep elevation gain and then drop across a bunch of like scree fields and boulder fields, like in the middle portion of it. So it was definitely one of those spots where like not a lot of other guys are gonna go. We actually didn't really see any other sign, like no trash. Saw like one fire pit that looked really, really old, but definitely a hidden little gem. And it was nice because it sticks out in like a peninsula of national forest and it's surrounded by private. There's some really juicy wallows and stuff on that side, really close to where I killed that bull that aren't marked on Onyx. So I think it's definitely a little bit of a honey hole. So wish I had a Montana elk tag going into this next year, but maybe in a year or two. We'll see.
Okay, guys, let's talk about shelters for 1 second. Seek Outside has been making hot tents and stoves since 2010, right there in Grand Junction, Colorado. And I've been using Seek Outside products for about 4 or 5 years now. And the newest one I just added to my lineup is the Courthouse. Now, you guys already know that Seek Outside is famous for their teepees, but the Courthouse is a wall tent, and it's the lightest wall tent on the market and one of the quickest and easiest to set up. So it's great for mobile base camps, or even if you just want to go camping with friends or family. But if you guys go to Seek Outside and use the code QUEST, you're going to save 10% on your next order and get the best shelter on the market for a lightweight mobile base camp or a backcountry rip. So check it out and use that code QUEST. Yeah, I didn't get my Montana tag either, but yeah, it's cool. And dude, I mean, even a mile and a half when you're carrying that much weight, I can only imagine, like you said, dealing with blisters and spots of your leg that were never supposed to, never designed to carry weight. That must have been, how was that meant, like mentally getting through that? Because, that's to me one of the hardest parts is just the mental challenge.
Yeah, mentally, I just like, oh, just got to get through this. Obviously, don't want anything good to waste. Want to get my 3x3 trophy out of there. So there was no doubt in my mind we're gonna get everything out. And then afterwards, like, you know the feeling, like you're just so excited you finally were able to pull that off. And like really the feeling after you do it is better almost than when it happens. So that kept us going through that. But yeah, now I'm just absolutely ate up with it, practicing archery all the time. Got two elk tags good. Going into this year, one's a cow tag in Montana, and then I got an Idaho tag too as well. So can't wait to embrace the suffering again.
Yeah, man. Yeah, there's nothing like elk during the rut when they're going crazy like that. And I was really surprised. You know, when you're hunting mule deer and you come from hunting whitetail, it's different, but they're still deer at the end of the day. They kind of act like deer. But I was really surprised by how different elk hunting was, like just how different they behave and move and stuff like that. Did you find it was a pretty, did you find yourself like kind of trying to hunt them almost like deer and then kind of like, or what were some of the biggest differences, I guess, you noticed between elk and deer?
Obviously, the country is just insane. It's no flat field here in Virginia where you're just walking a couple hundred yards in the truck. But like starting out, I really enjoy glassing. So starting out, I was trying to do a lot of that, and that paid off. Obviously, in the end, we found that herd from so far away. But yeah, no, all the hiking, the moving, you're not just sitting there waiting for a deer to walk through a bean field, and then learning all the different vocalizations like over that summer was. It was a lot of work. I mean, you're sitting there listening to different apps and stuff, and then trying to match the vocalizations you can make to those apps, and then trying to learn the meaning behind them without actually being in the field or having like 10 years of experience, like some of these local Western hunters do. So that was the biggest learning curve. And then practicing for those shots. Like, I mean, this animal runs into 30 yards, they weigh 600 pounds, and you got to make sure to try to get that arrow in the right spot to not wound them. Because wounding an elk and you're a couple miles in, haven't done it, hope I never do, but I can't imagine that's a pretty awful feeling.
Yeah, for sure, man. And like for me too, just like the mentality of, you know, you pull up at the trailhead, maybe there's some other trucks there, maybe you look up at this mountain or hill and you're like, good Lord, like it just looks, it always looks bigger and scarier when you get there than it does when you're e-scouting. But it's never, obviously it can be really bad, but I've found that like it's never really as bad as like when you get there and look at it and you're freaking out. It's never really as bad as you're like thinking it's gonna be, as long as you've, you know, done your work and trained. But like even just having someone out there who's like more like accustomed to mountains to just kind of be like, it's all right, you know, it's fine, man. We're just gonna go up there just 1 foot at a time. We'll be all right. You know what I mean? Did you find yourself like really surprised by the intimidation factor of the terrain when you got out there for the first time?
Yeah, definitely. Like when you're e-scouting, like you said, it looks like tiny little knolls on the on your app. But getting out there and you're just like, holy crap! Like even the little hills, they're steep, side hilling, all those things just sucks. But once you do it for the first day and like, all right, you get your joints and your muscles worn down a little bit. You're like, all right, we're good to go. So.
Would you say that hunting out west, mountain hunting, has taught you anything about life?
I'd say just embracing the suck, essentially.
What
Nothing.
do you
If it's
mean?
if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. So I think there's a lot of people, people back home like, oh, I want to go on an elk hunt. I want to do this, that. But as soon as they start seeing some of these videos and some of this, the terrain you got to do and what you got to do to get out there, they get quiet and back off quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a romantic thing, but it's very real when you get there. And I try to tell people a lot of times too. It's like, you know, if you just kind of look at my social media and some of the videos I put out, you're like, man, this is so awesome. But you know, I'd say at least half, if not more, of these trips is either like misery or boredom. Probably more than half.
Yeah, most definitely. Sitting in a tent at night and it's raining, no cell service, you're trying to save your battery. It's definitely something you gotta overcome, just like the mental aspect of it, being alone in the mountains. 'Cause a lot of the stuff I do is solo. So yeah. Getting rained on, snowed on, you're bear hunting, and you're just like, God, this is awful. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, but then it's when you come back home and the whole experience, I was talking to somebody the other day about it. It's like, it's, there are parts of it that are fun, but like fun is a word that is, does not even come close to having the depth to like articulate what it is. it's an experience. It's like a transformative experience. It's not like fun. There are fun parts of it, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the best parts is like the rewarding, like gratification you get after coming back, whether or not you successfully got an animal or just getting out there. For me, is trying to learn something new every single time or accomplish some small goal of mine when I am out there. So like my first elk hunt, I was like, if I hear a bugle, that's all I care about. Like, or at least see some elk. And after the first couple of days, I heard some bugles, saw an elk. I was like, okay, maybe, just maybe, I can kill one. And it eventually worked out. So like going in this last spring when we went back to bear hunt again, I was like, you know what? As long as I see a bear, I'm happy. If I can glass one up myself, like that'll be a big accomplishment of mine. And literally the first morning sitting down, picked out a black bear from a mile and a half away. We should have sat there and watched what he did, but we just bombed over there and tried to make a play on him, and he zigged and we zagged and couldn't get on him. But I just felt, at least some gratification of seeing a bear. Maybe on year three of bear hunting, we'll kill one.
I mean that's you just setting your expectations. Like, I agree, man. I mean, there's a lot of trips where I say to myself, if I can just get, like, you know, 'cause we're coming from the East Coast, you know, there we have so much stuff working against us. We can't scout. We can't go out there and scout, really. I mean, you can, but nobody really has time from the East Coast to go out and scout. So, I mean, if you're able to, from your home in Virginia or whatever, wherever you may be, you know, e-scout and then, you know, get the tag, pull off the trip logistically, and put yourself in an area where you're like, have been able to get away from other hunters and find animals. I mean, that's a win. Like already. And then like if you can do that, it's just a matter of time. If you keep coming back, it's just a matter of time before you're gonna be notching the tag.
Yeah, absolutely. And they say like most DIY, like Western hunts, are what, like 10 to 20% success rate, lower than that on a lot of stuff. So for me, just a goal of trying to get my personal success rate up. Like if I can go back in 10 years and look at all the tags I've had, where my success rate's going to be at. So that's my biggest thing, is just trying to build that up. And that takes experience and time getting out in the field.
And giving yourself enough time. I mean, the first 2 or 3 days of your hunt are going to be essentially scouting. Like, I even try to, I mean, I'm kind of lucky, blessed to be able to have more time to do it, but I like to try to get out a couple of days early and just scout. But even if you have to go out, you know, for the opener, and one little tip is sometimes it's better to not go for the opener because that's when everybody goes. Sometimes it's better to go a week after. But yeah, just setting those expectations, realizing you're going to be looking for animals for a while, and don't put so much pressure on yourself to like kill on your first hunt or every hunt. Just go out there and, like you said, and you always end up learning more from when you don't kill. So just going out, enjoying the experience, learning something. And maybe you can get yourself in a position where you might get something.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
All right, man. So what do you got coming up this year? What are you doing this year?
So this year I've got a Kansas whitetail tag. Gonna hunt that with a buddy of mine in Kansas who owns a guiding operation. So that'll be fun. Got really high hopes for trying to get a really nice whitetail. So we'll see
Nice.
how that goes. And then I've got Idaho elk, and I've got two October mule deer tags. Really right around that middle point of October. So I'm looking forward to those because I know there'll be a challenge. Like that
Where are
time of
those
year, the
at?
bucks are not rutting. They're not Wyoming and Idaho. So I'm looking forward to that. Like I said, like that'll be another challenge, as far as those bucks will be harder to kill just because they'll be by themselves, most likely. Not rutting. Depending on weather, they're gonna be pretty high up in the mountains where I'm gonna be at. So I'm really looking forward to that hunt. Just like testing my glassing skills and also my shooting skills. So I'm probably gonna give myself like 2 to 3 weeks total and hunt those two tags together. And then after that, I got that Montana cow tag. So that's near my buddy's house in Montana. Probably going to backpack into some wilderness areas right there where I can get some different access opportunities by crossing some water to get away from some people. So I'm
Nice.
excited about that. I was able to hike around and we'll say scout this spring there. I was able to put 6 miles in and just get as far back as I could and look at some stuff. So I
Cool.
think I'll have a pretty good shot of getting on a cow and some nice tenderloins in the freezer. And then I've got a Sitka blacktail tag in Kodiak this year.
Nice.
So that'll be my first trip to Alaska. I think it's like the 19th to the 26th. So I'm really excited for that.
Of November.
Obviously. Yeah.
Cool, man. That's gonna be cold, but it'll be good.
Yeah. Cold and wet.
Are you doing the boat or what are you doing?
So it's through with Cole Kramer. He's the outfitter.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going with him. We'll be packing in a little bit, and it sounds like we'll be doing some floating through like some interior rivers to get to a spike camp.
Ooh, nice.
But yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that hunt.
Yeah,
So
that'll be cool,
hopefully see
man.
some brown bears and get an eye on them. So that'd be cool.
Yeah. Oh, you'll definitely see some brown bears. Well, cool, man. Well, sounds like yeah, you took a difficult situation and kind of made the best of it and learned from it and living life to the fullest, man. So, congrats and hope you have a great season. Where can folks follow along with you if they want to check out what you're up to?
Carter underscore underscore Lewis underscore on Instagram.
Okay,
I'll
cool.
just sort of post updates and what I'm doing. So, yep, nothing too serious.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Well, it's good to talk to another DIY East Coaster. Good work, man. Keep up the good work and let's stay in touch and let me know how your season goes, man.
Man, I appreciate it. Good luck to you as well.
All right. Talk to you soon.